Hallo bei den philosophischen Pauken, sagt Günter Friesinger. Heute mit einer Sendung, die sich wieder mit einem Vortrag auseinandersetzt, der bei der Robexotica 2006 beim Symposium Regulierungsträume, Kybernetik und Robotik als Universalwissenschaft gehalten wurde. Und zwar handelt es sich um einen Vortrag von Peter Assaro. Peter Assaro ist Philosoph, ist aber auch Künstler, hat unter anderem gearbeitet an der Galerie der Forschung, an der Akademie der Wissenschaften in Wien und hält einen Vortrag, in dem er sich die Frage stellt, was ist mit der Kybernetik passiert?
The 1940s saw the rise of the science of cybernetics, a science seemingly bent on universalism, aimed at refiguring all of the other sciences in its own image. Cybernetics followed in the heritage of 19th century Victorian dreams of the perfectly regulated political economy managed by perfectly regulated science. The dream of the previous century was for science to provide the means to regulate all spheres of productive life. In the 20th century, science itself was to be brought under more careful and precise regulation, that offered by cybernetics. But what was cybernetics? What were the scope and extent of its dreams of regulation? Was it merely a good-willed interdisciplinary movement that saw real metaphorical resemblances between problems in different domains? Did it aspire to supplant and displace the other sciences with its own epistemology and metaphysics? Was it the heir apparent to the throne of science, or a mere pretender, seeking devious ways to undermine specialized knowledge well beyond its legitimate means? Was it a revolution in science, the science of the dawning age of information? Or was it merely a clever narrative about a fictional past that led to a rosy cybernetic future? In short, what was cybernetics? And what happened to it? Did it disappear because it failed in its revolutionary goals? Or did it disappear because it was so successful that it is now merely taken for granted? Indeed, did it disappear at all? These are some of the questions I hope to provide some insights in today. So what is or was cybernetics? A great deal of the problem of saying what happened to cybernetics depends on what we think cybernetics was. When I tell people that I study the history of cybernetics, they usually say, "Wow, that's interesting. So what's cybernetics?" When talking to people of various backgrounds who have already thought about the history of cybernetics, I find that there are at least three distinct things that they have in mind. And for your convenience today, I'll call these the broad view, the narrow view, and the internal view. And for those of you who have read the program statement for this year's RoboExotica, you'll already be familiar with the main ideas of the broad view and have some hints at the narrow view. But why don't we start by looking into the etymology of cybernetics? The word cybernetics was coined by the MIT mathematician Norbert Wiener in the summer of 1947 to refer to the new science of command and control in animals and machines, which he helped to establish and develop. The word was derived from the Greek kubernetes, meaning steersman or ship pilot. Unknown to Wiener at the time, Plato had used the adjective kubernetikon in the Gorgias to refer to the science of piloting, and the French physicist André-Marie Ampère had derived the French word cybernétique directly from the Greek to refer to the science of government in his classification of the sciences, the Essai sur la philosophie des sciences. And so the root kuber leads us directly to governor, the regulator, guide, and pilot of steam engines and states. It thus lies at a powerful metaphorical intersection of political economy and technology, social and material order, and the regulation of animals and machines. The basic idea of cybernetics is that complex systems, such as living systems, societies, and brains, are self-regulated by the feedback of information. By systematically analyzing the feedback mechanisms which regulate complex systems, cybernetics hopes to discover the means of controlling these systems technologically and to develop the capability of synthesizing artificial systems with similar capabilities. And here we see James Watt's steam engine governor, which was an early mechanical feedback system. The narrow view. The narrow view of cybernetics is that the mechanism of negative feedback control is the metaphysically central to the order and organization of the universe. This was the theme of the original MACI conferences, which were actually called Symposia on Circular Causal and Feedback Mechanisms in Biological and Social Systems. The idea was to find these mechanisms in every science, and to thereby translate knowledge produced about them in one discipline to the problems of understanding them in another discipline. For those less familiar with the concept, a brief sketch may be in order. Negative feedback is the ability of a mechanism to receive information about the result of its own action, to calculate a correction based on the distance of that result from a pre-specified goal, and to act so as to reduce that distance. Negative feedback thus creates a circular causal loop whereby an action E causes an effect, which in turn causes a new action, which has been calculated to reduce the error in the next effect, and so on. The challenge of designing a useful machine for solving a given problem thus lies in determining how to perform the error-reducing calculation. Negative feedback can be realized by a very simple mechanism. A common example is the thermostat, which regulates the temperature of a room by turning the heat on when the temperature falls too low and switches it off again when the temperature rises. Another is James Watt's governor, which regulates a steam engine by opening a valve when it spins too fast and closing the valve again as it slows down. The basic concept of feedback was first developed seriously in 1932 by the engineer Nyquist in his regeneration theory, and reached maturity with the general theory of servo mechanisms published by McCall in 1945. Information was given a precise mathematical definition by the Bell Telephone Labs engineer Claude Shannon in his Mathematical Theory of Communication, published in 1948, though his work had been circulated in secret for nearly a decade before that. He defined information as a measure in the reduction of uncertainty caused by receiving a particular message from a whole set of possible messages. His formalisms drew upon Boolean logic and probability theory and derived a purely mathematical definition of information. But this was only a means to his ultimate goal, which took the form of the error-correcting channel for sending messages. His equations tell you how much noise can be allowed on a given channel, which tells you how many signals can be transmitted in a given period of time. And this is the fundamental mathematical theory which lets engineers pile thousands of telephone calls onto a single wire, and now millions of telephone calls into microwaves. Wiener began thinking about negative feedback when he was trying, along with Julian Bigelow and Arturo Rosenbluth, to design an anti-aircraft gun that would follow a moving target, called the AA predictor. When they wrote their landmark paper in 1943 on behavior, purpose, and teleology, they drew on both the servomechanical and the information theoretic concepts of feedback. The other landmark paper of 1943, McCulloch and Pitt's paper on the logical calculus of neural nets, used a radically different formalism drawn from Rudolf Carnap's positivist logic, one of the many Viennese connections to cybernetics, but was soon simplified to the Boolean logics of Shannon's formalisms. In it, they demonstrated mathematically that a cyclic neural network, one that fed back in upon itself, could instantiate a universal Turing machine, and thus implicitly argued that the brain was a universal computer. In the long run, most of the cyberneticians would follow the information formalism rather than the original servomechanical one. The reason is probably that the concept of information was itself far more universalizable than the concept of error correction alone. Being able to calculate the correction to the voltage of an electronic motor is not very intellectually inspiring all by itself. And with the development of the stored program digital computer over the next few years, the use of Boolean logic, its formalisms as information, and the potential of universal computation would all conspire to form a uniquely powerful concept for cybernetics to lay its claims to being a universal science, with computation as the universal technology. If we accept this narrow view of cybernetics as being the science of feedback control mechanisms, then cybernetics is alive and well. Of course, nobody calls it cybernetics anymore. They simply call it control theory or information theory. And there are still plenty of conferences on these topics every year. Mostly this work consists in hardcore engineering disciplines, servomechanical control systems at the border of electrical and mechanical engineering, their application in robotic systems and manufacturing processes, the design of control systems for planes and rockets, and increasingly in automobiles with such things as electronic fuel injection systems, anti-lock brakes, and traction control systems, and countless other industrial and consumer applications. As the basis of information theory and signal processing, it is central to the hardware that makes cell phones, the Ethernet, wireless networks, and these sorts of things actually work. In each case, the basic theories which enable these technologies is the self-regulated mechanism, negative feedback, or error correction signal processors. Again, in each case, there is a rich history of technical advancement, much of it conducted without much concern for cybernetics per se, its universal ambitions, or world vision. It would be impossible to say what percentage of these technologies depend on cybernetics. Indeed, one could probably make a convincing case that cybernetics itself merely appropriated servomechanical control theory and information theory as its first disciplinary conquest, from which it began telling stories of its historical inevitability and impending conquest of the other sciences, which it then pursued in earnest.
Users, there is trouble ahead, I said. Users, it is totally sad. But users, the future lies in your hand, 'cause it's all about surveillance, comrades.
You don't know what I mean, well, comrades, there's new tech on the scene. Come on, comrades, stand up, fight for your right. There's a need for your experience.
It's fun to hack the RFID. It's fun to hack the RFID. Hey.
Technology is just a matter of choice. You can microwave all their toys.
It's fun to hack the RFID. It's fun to hack the RFID. Hey.
They want to store everything about you, but there's plenty of things you can do.
Own it. It's the way to resist, I said. Own it. Let's call it digital fist. Own it. There is not much time left for civil disobedience.
Awesome. There's a lot we can share. Awesome. Let's destroy the nightmare. Awesome. A million lines of code. We just need the right compiler.
It's fun to hack the RFID. It's fun to hack the RFID. Hey.
They use it in passports and cell phones you buy. But fuck it, it's all a lie.
RFID. You'll find it at the supermarket.
No, folks, set them all by yourself. Put your pride on the shelf.
Hack it. Fuck it. Hack it. Fuck it. Hack it, fuck it, 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 hack it, fuck it,
If the narrow view is thus drawn from a close reading of the underlying mathematical theories and with the technological products of those theories, then it appears to be not so universalizing. While it has enabled many of the significant technologies of the information age, computers, guided missiles, mobile phones, robots, the internet, it has not rewritten our basic understanding of science and society. In the end, it is just one important and useful part of engineering among many. The broad view starts from taking the rhetoric of cybernetics seriously. This is the view promoted by the introductory statement of this year's Robo Exotica, Dreams of Regulation. In its self-centered retellings of the history of science and human civilization as leading ultimately and inevitably to the science of cybernetics, it created its own mythology. The age of matter was passing away, and the age of form was ascending. The age of industry, symbolized by the steam engine, was giving way to the age of information, symbolized by the computer. and where physics had promised to give humanity domination over matter and energy, cybernetics now promised to give humanity domination over information and organization. This was how cybernetics saw itself as replacing physics as the science upon which all others would be based. Cybernetics was thereby nothing if not radical and revolutionary. It sought to overthrow the entire scientific order as handed down from Newton, and with it the social and political order. It should be noted that most of the people involved in the design and the construction of the first computers digitally, the first stored program digital computers, notably Turing, von Neumann, and Julian Bigelow, this is Turing's first computer, were all involved in the cybernetics groups before they built the first computers. This is the Ratio Club, which is a British cybernetics group that met in the late 1940s. You can see Turing is down in the corner. The guy I work on, Ashby, is in the middle. They also explicitly drew on cybernetic concepts of feedback and information, and especially McCulloch and Pitt's neural networks paper and the actual design in their actual designs for the first computers. Von Neumann's Institute for Advanced Study Machine, here and seen here, and Turing's ACE machine, which stands for Automatic Computing Engine. Moreover, their explicit aim in designing these machines was to automate the calculation of scientific models. Draw the whole of science into the practice of representing knowledge as mathematical models. In short, the digital computer is the quintessential cybernetic device. The strategy for the cybernetic revolution was ambitious and multifaceted, but it was also comprehensive and organic. Indeed, much of the compelling nature of its rhetoric derived from the consistency and elegance of its theology. All of the parts fit together and reinforced one another. At the center of its rhetorical strength was the double move of establishing itself as the providing a universal language for science and promoting this language through interdisciplinary projects and conferences and the use of the computer and computational models. By the early 1940s, Nicholas Hrushevsky was leading a weekly discussion group at the University of Chicago, which sought to turn biological knowledge into mathematical models. It was here that the young Viennese physicist Heinz von Forster was first introduced to Warren McCulloch, and where a few years earlier, Walter Pitts had also been introduced to McCulloch. By the late 1940s, the Macy conferences established the paradigm of the new interdisciplinary cybernetics. It brought together leading researchers in engineering, mathematics, physics, chemistry, biology, psychology, psychiatry, medicine, anthropology, economics, sociology, and philosophy. The goal was to co-opt the other sciences by getting them to speak the same language, the language of cybernetics. The strategy was to bring them together to talk about their own problems, to find the shared metaphors, to apply new metaphors and encourage the use of new cybernetic language. Less than 2 years later, in England, a group calling itself the Ratio Club began meeting for monthly cybernetic discussions. They had emerged from a conference on mathematical biology and set themselves the purpose of determining to what extent the human mind could be understood and simulated mathematically. All of these early cybernetic groups were alike in that they brought together different disciplines to discuss their problems with shared metaphors and the language of information and feedback. Again, the rhetoric of this strategy is remarkably powerful. Many scientists, not only those who attended the cybernetic meetings, were impressed by the new language and the promise of finding insights into their problems from other disciplines. And there was a genuine energy unleashed in these interdisciplinary collaborations which ensued. Mathematicians working with medical doctors, electrical engineers working with psychiatrists, and so forth. Cybernetics cannot, however, claim to be the original author of interdisciplinary science. Rather, that credit goes to World War II. The great powers fighting that war recognized early on that science could provide the advantages necessary to win. They brought together scientists from many disciplines to solve the practical problems of warfighting. Operations research was one such product of this effort, in which mathematics was brought to bear on nearly every aspect of war strategy and tactics, from the search patterns of planes looking for U-boats to the ideal size of a supply convoy and ultimately to the prototype of big science itself, the Manhattan Project, and its world-shattering atomic bomb. Indeed, it was the development of an intelligent anti-aircraft gun that had brought the Wiener team together and the British and American teams that built the first digital computers as well as Shannon and Weaver, who brought us information theory. Thus, at its birth, cybernetics, interdisciplinarity, and World War II are all bound up in a tight circular causal loop that would be difficult to untangle. The mythological power that thereby surrounded cybernetics was also tied up in the historical moment it found itself in, and was extrapolated directly from Christian mythology of creation and destruction. The world had grown wary of war and longed to be far more rational. It had seen a new and godlike powers put in human hands. The atomic bomb presented both the image and the reality of a new kind of apocalypse. DNA offered a new mythology of origins. And robotics and automata promised to give humans the ability to create life and become themselves gods. And it was cybernetics which wrote the narrative that connected these together, presented a scientific history of an evolving universe that would lead inevitably to the intelligent human civilization, and place in its hands the means to its own destruction and the creation of its successors. Cybernetics offered not only a way to understand this history, but to manage and control it. It offered game theory as the means of managing the political crisis of nuclear arms. It offered technological control as the means of providing a better life, and it offered information as the metaphysical and economic basis of this brave new world. Cybernetics is, in this view, simply equated with a technological utopia enabled by and articulated through information, communication, and computation. If we accept this broad view, we are already living in the age of cybernetics, though maybe we just call it the age of information. It does not matter that nobody practices anything called cybernetics, because everybody is always already cybernetic, everywhere and all the time. While it is not without some appeal, perhaps this is too broad a view. What else might cybernetics be? It is too narrow to say that it is just feedback mechanisms, and it is too broad to say that it is a techno-utopianism. Rather, the truth must lie somewhere in between. Practitioners of cybernetics seem to be aware that of the untenability of the grand universalizing project. On the one hand, they all believed that the world was quintessentially cybernetic, and while they wished to reform the sciences with the universal language of systems and mathematical models, they realized that this language was easily appropriated, misused, and abused. Everywhere, scientists were popping up and laying claim to these terms, and doing some rather uninteresting things with them. This is one of the interesting things. In particular, there was the new field of artificial intelligence. While its pioneers had been trained by the cyberneticians, and its aims of achieving human intelligence in machines were deeply cybernetic, by the 1960s, political rifts had formed around it. McCulloch saw AI as being little more than the construction of toys and the solving of logical puzzles. He did not see that it could offer any insights into the human mind because it failed at a fundamental level to address the structure and operation of the brain. From the other side, Marvin Minsky and Seymour Papert had published a logical critique of neural networks in their book Perceptrons. This had the effect of killing funding for neural network research for a decade and forced AI researchers to distance themselves from cyberneticians. The cyberneticians regrouped around new research themes, such as bionics and self-organizing systems, but by the end of the 1960s, they found it hard to get funding. The choice to regroup around bionics and self-organizing systems was one aspect of a movement internal to cybernetics, and so I will call this the internal view. With the rise of a new generation of cybernetics researchers in the mid-1950s, a decade after cybernetics had first come together, came an even more radical vision of what cybernetics was. It would come to call itself second-order cybernetics. And its mythology was based upon distancing itself from first-order cybernetics of Wiener and McCulloch.
Man ist doch, man ist hier. Wer sich mir nicht in den Weg stellt, wird erschossen.